Let's get started with what's going on right now between Israel and Hezbollah. Yesterday, we learned a shocking news about these pager bombing attack in Lebanon. What was going on and what has happened? First of all, let's talk about the casualties. What's going on right now?
Yes, the latest numbers from the Minister of Defense of Health in Lebanon is that there was 2,800 people injured, 2,800. Of those, around 300 are in critical condition, and 12 were martyred. Two of the martyrs were children under 9 years old, and two civilian women. One of them is being buried as we're speaking right now in a mass funeral. The casualties have been spread around the geography of Lebanon, but mainly concentrated in three places. The Dahiya, the southern suburb of Beirut, got the bulk of injuries, 1,850. Then it's followed by the south of Lebanon, 750 injured, and finally in the Biqa'a Valley near the border with Syria, 150 people were injured. And to note there is that the Biqa'a Valley injuries were mostly transported to Syria because the Minister of Health of Syria immediately ordered the opening of all the specialized hospitals. Since it is like 20 minutes from the Biqa'a Valley to Damascus, well, it's like an hour and a half almost for to reach Beirut from there. So this is about the number of casualties as we're speaking. And of course, out of the critical condition, we don't know what's going to be the fate of those 300.
Yeah. And in terms of how did it happen and how they were capable of doing this, do you have any information?
Yeah, so the latest came out from the resistance security, personnel have informed the media here in Lebanon, and it's what they are saying is now being confirmed by intelligence agencies and security agencies around the world. There was an operation conducted by the Mossad and the Amman, which the Amman is the military services, the military intelligence services of the Zionist colony. Pagers made by this Taiwanese company called, right now I'm blanking out on the name of it, gold something. And this company had issued Hungarian company. Yeah, Hungarian company that had received the rights from this Taiwanese company, other Taiwanese company, and I thought I wrote down the name of it. It is called Gold Apollo. It's Taiwanese company. The Taiwanese police actually raided the head offices and security services of Taiwan and the factories of Gold Apollo. And in interviews of the CEO of Gold Apollo Taiwan, he told the media that 3 years ago, a Hungarian company called BAC Consulting, KFC, had paid royalties to use the Gold Apollo name and to reproduce their pagers in Hungary. That actually the payments were very unusual, very high numbers were given to them, and the transfers of the payments were also unusual, coming from, instead of directly from Hungary to Taiwan, were coming from banks in the Middle East. He didn't define which banks and which country, but it's clear that it maybe was in Israel. During these 3 years, it is the CEO of this company in Hungary, Back Consulting. Her name is Christiana Arcidiano Barsoni. She has a specialization in the chemical and nuclear combustion, and she has written multiple academic papers about that, and that's her specialty. She somehow was appointed as the head of this company, which seems to be a shadow company because the address in Hungary is a residential location. There is no such thing as a factory there and or a headquarters for this company. So it was a Mossad and Amman operation. They, according to Hezbollah's intelligence services right now, is that the Israelis implanted an IC chip in the pagers that has extra lithium in it. So the explosions that happened in these pagers didn't happen because of the battery that's in them, but because of the lithium in this added IC chip. Given that lithium is explosive, as we see Tesla cars exploding and other communication devices that have lithium batteries also going through the problem of overheating. And given that the explosive was not C4 or something that is could be flagged, because it's just lithium-based product, it passed all the security apparatuses of all the countries that these products had to go through before their final delivery here in Lebanon. The way it was activated, the explosion, according to, again, the Hezbollah and the security services in Lebanon here, is that there was an infiltration that happened on the broadcast network of these pagers. For our audience, they need to understand that pagers don't work on internet or cell towers. They work on radio waves, short wave, and there is a broadcast device that comes with the devices that you will use with it in situations of, let's say, hospitals having their own broadcasting units for the nurses and doctors, and or universities for the security on campus and so forth. This is how it works. So there was clearly an infiltration, and this is where I think things need to be concentrated on how did the Israeli intelligence infiltrate the software on the broadcasting unit for these pagers. And a message was sent to all these pagers active at the time. And within 4 seconds, the lithium in this IC chip overheated and exploded. The majority of those who are in critical condition or injured, it's those who open the pager and try to read the message, even if they didn't look at the message and it was just on the side of their belt or in their pocket in the front, it exploded even without opening the message. And pagers that were not in network reach and or were turned off didn't explode. So this is how it was done, according to the latest updates.
Yeah. It was just in Lebanon or in other countries we had the same issue?
There is some rumors that some areas in Syria had the same issue, but I have not yet seen any clear announcement from the Syrian government or any resistance forces that said that, there was injuries in Syria or other locations. I want to note also that the Iraqi Minister of Health arrived with a huge number of doctors and nurses and medical aid in the morning. And that shows you the cross solidarity in the region about this. One last thing to note about the injured, at least half of them are civilians, and we know that the biggest demographic of injuries outside, let's say resistance members, is the medical cadre in Lebanon, who also use these same systems because of the restrictions on using cell phones in hospitals.
Yeah. And the other thing would be, they're talking about it was some sort of retaliation for what Hezbollah did to Israel in their latest attack on Israel. Right now, how does Hezbollah perceive what's going on, and how do they want to respond if they're going to do that?
Well, it's clearly a response to Hezbollah's attack a few weeks ago in retaliation for the assassination of General Fuad Shukr. At the time, Hezbollah destroyed the headquarters of the Amman, specifically Unit 8200, which would be responsible for such attack on these pagers. And the that led to the resignation of the general leading Amman. We haven't seen him since, so he could be actually dead, and the Israelis claiming that he just resigned and we'll discover him dead somehow a few weeks from now. But according to Hezbollah, they had liquidated at least 30 members of Amman during that attack. So American media outlets are saying that the Minister of Defense of the Zionist colony, who's getting fired right now, called Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense of the United States, yesterday, minutes before the attack was conducted, this terrorist attack. And thus, you know, it is clearly a coordinated attack. You know, there is no way that the Israelis would have been able to do this work without the involvement of Western intelligence agencies and military intelligence. And even the broadcast of this message into the network required something probably flying over Lebanon at the time that sent the message to the broadcasting machines.
And we know that from the attitude that we've seen so far from Iran, from Hezbollah, they're not getting so excited in responding, but they're going to respond. And how do you find right now the public opinion in Lebanon?
It's actually very extraordinary since, you know, yesterday. First off, all hospitals opened their doors without payment, without sectarian and or regional considerations. 1,000 hospitals were involved in the rescue mission. This includes hospitals in all regions, crossing sectarian and religious backgrounds. We've seen the leadership of much of all of the sects making statements of condemnation and solidarity, calling this terrorism. We've even seen a huge chunk of what is called, the opposition here in the Lebanese parliament that are usually counted as American tools coming out and condemning this. And the solidarity in the streets yesterday, it was amazing. People were coming out to the streets, blocking roads to hospitals individually without the presence of police and so on, and directing traffic away to make sure that the entrances of hospitals are open and ambulances can reach without delay. And this was happening all across the country, from north to the south. The mood in the beginning on the street was very angry. You could see people, first off, shocked. You know, the intention of this attack by the Amman and the Mossad was to shock people. The Israelis are claiming that they were planning to use this attack in the first moments of an all-out war, but that they did this attack now and wasted this card that they have in their genocidal, arsenal to retaliate for the attack on the Amman headquarters. And so the initial reaction on the streets were anger. People wanted immediate response. And a statement came out from Hezbollah saying that they will be delivering the just punishment. So these wars are very heavy, and that they will be, their punishment will arrive from a place that the Israelis cannot predict. So Hezbollah for sure is going to respond. Now people have calmed down. Thank God, alhamdulillah, that the numbers of martyred is very low. The whole health network in Lebanon and the region responded nicely and correctly. And Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, is scheduled to give a speech tomorrow. This just announced a few hours ago. So we should be expecting to hear from him more details about how this attack was done, what is the population in Lebanon should be expecting as a response from Hezbollah by tomorrow.
Yeah, we've learned that last week the U.S. aircraft carrier just left the Middle East, just went to Pacific. And on the other hand, we have this type of disagreement in Israel, as you mentioned, between Netanyahu and his Minister of Defense, that they want to attack Hezbollah. And do you find it right now that they really want to attack Hezbollah, or just they want to make some sort of, I'm talking about how Hezbollah is perceiving this in their mind. Are they really taking this serious, that Israel wants to attack them, or they're thinking that Israel is just making noises?
Look, they're taking it serious, but let's look at how the Israeli media is responding. That will help us to see what was the plan of the Israelis and how should Hezbollah respond to it. The Israeli media were jubilant and were gloating about this attack and the high number of casualties, injured. And at the same time, they were so out of their mind in happiness at this crime that they gave a name to this operation, the media itself, and they called it Operation Under the Belt. They can't see the irony in what they're saying, but basically they are happy to be punching under the belt, and that's, you know, how karma ga is different as an Israeli quote-unquote martial art than all the other honorable martial arts that don't allow you to hit somebody in the back of the head or punch them in the groin. Karma ga and all of the way that Israel works is in this dishonorable, disgusting way it deals with things. So given that, this is the way they were talking, the Israeli media, they were hoping that the first line of cadres in Hezbollah will be the ones that are martyred in this attack. As we see right now, Hezbollah is always very, happy to announce the names of its martyrs. It never hides them. Up until now, the most significant person we saw as a name is the son, a young man in his 20s, the son of an MP that belongs to the Hezbollah bloc in the Lebanese parliament. And by the way, that's the second son of a Hezbollah member of parliament that has been assassinated since the beginning of this genocide in Gaza. So in reality, there was a huge failure. They did not reach the first line. We don't know what's the value of the majority of those who got martyred. We will be hearing, and those who are injured in the next 24 hours, as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah speaks. Therefore, we can see how the Western media, who were probably prepared to glorify this attack as a huge success, but by the most sophisticated, intelligent AI and computer savvy nation on the world. This is what the Western media were ready to do. But because it failed to actually achieve any real target being killed, now we see the Western media kind of pulling back and trying to not make it into a significant thing. But the rest of the world and the rest of the world's media are seeing this as the most dangerous act of provocation in any war yet. We have never seen the use of cyber warfare in such ways that targets directly consumer products. You know, the Israelis are ready, it seems like, to blow up our cell phones, to blow up our laptops, to blow up our smartphones and smart appliances, to blow up our cars with lithium batteries. They're ready to do that, it seems like. They're ready to probably poison every food and every medicine. And as we see in Gaza, with the spread of the diseases that are there, that's for sure delivered through a biological and chemical warfare. So this is a nation that is willing to cross all the lines, not only in international law, but the lines of agreed warfare, including the agreed upon parameters of cyber warfare that up until now we have seen. The use of consumer products and targeting consumer products now opens the door for genocidal intentions that we have never seen in modern history.
Yeah. And right now, it seems that the situation is in the West Bank is so critical. And what do we know about the situation there?
Yeah, in the West Bank is definitely heating up on a daily basis. There's invasions of cities in the north and south and center of the West Bank. Free Palestine TV is covering all of these activities and the resistance on a daily basis. You can watch all those videos on our different social media, and freepalestine.video is the website. You can visit it there. But, we've seen, for instance,
which is in the description of this video. Everybody can access that.
Thank you. And, you know, some of the things that we've seen, for instance, the night before this attack on Lebanon, the Israeli special forces invaded the Ramallah area. And this is supposed to be a safe area in the West Bank under the control of the collaborationist Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas. And they kidnapped three women in the middle of the night from their homes. One of them is a student leader in the university. The other is the wife of Ahmed Saadat, the Secretary General of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who's been in Israeli dungeons since the beginning of the Second Intifada in 2002. So the level of incursions into different towns and the level of attacks, and this is coupled at the same time with pogroms conducted by the colonists in the West Bank. We saw colonists attack an elementary school and kindergarten in the Jordan Valley, carrying sticks, beating up these students and the teachers, and the Israeli military coming, and the Israeli police, and then beating up the families and the teaching cater, and chasing the kids into the fields, and arresting the head of the school, the principal, as well as one of the parents that didn't do anything but defend and protect their child from blows by the batons that the settlers were carrying. So there is pogroms happening. At the same time, it's being supported by the Israeli military, and much of the refugee camps in the West Bank, around Ramallah, around Beit Lahem, around Tul Kerem and Jenin and Hebron, they are living the worst conditions at all, with full closures of all their entrances and people having to walk through wilderness and the woods to reach their homes, and destruction of their infrastructure, the roads, the pipelines, the water, the electricity, the sewers, all of it destroyed in much of the refugee camps in the West Bank. And this is exacerbating the condition. But at the same time, we look at it, the resistance that the Palestinians are doing, and it's increasing. Every day there's two, three Israeli bulldozers or tanks or jeeps that are blown up by improvised explosive devices, and there's everyday confrontations during these invasions. And one last thing I would say about the West Bank is that there was a huge demonstration in Jenin City two nights ago against the collaboration of the Palestinian Authority and its security forces. And this is hasn't been heard of yet. You see, so the boiling point inside the West Bank is not only going to bring us into a direct confrontation, as is happening on a daily basis between the Israeli occupiers and the Palestinians, but that the Palestinian Authority and its security forces very soon will see themselves as the primary target of the resistance, who are reeling from the actions of the collaborationists and the spies that are giving the information about the resistance to the Israelis.
Yeah. The other thing that you've learned about Lloyd Austin, you talk about Lloyd Austin talking with Israelis before this attack. And we've learned that Lloyd Austin said to Israelis that if they're going to attack Iran, if the main reason of attacking Hezbollah would be bringing Iran into the conflict, if something happens between Israel and Iran, they're not going to support Israel. It seems that they know that the United States would not pick a fight with Iran, and we know that Iran is not willing to just widen the conflict, because they're focused on what's going on in Gaza, they're focused on what's going on in the West Bank, and their priority is this Palestine, is not just the conflict between Iran and Israel. And right now, do you think that how the whole situation right now with what's going on in Gaza, and more than we're approaching a year of this conflict, and how the resistance is perceiving this conflict? Is it getting, because of the, we've seen how weak Israel was in this conflict, and do they really understand? Are they getting stronger, or are they getting more united against Israel? How do you find it right now?
You know, this connects to your question, two questions ago, and I didn't answer it fully at the time. You see, clearly, Netanyahu, looking at the quagmire he's having inside Palestine, where he's unable to defeat the Palestinians, and the Palestinians are refusing to carry the white flag and continuing to resist. The Israeli economy, the Israeli military is fatigued. It cannot continue this for much longer. And the whole world is sick of Israel, and the American elections are approaching, right? So he has been, over the last 2 months, those assassinations of General Shukr here in Beirut and the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran were both baits to try to push the axis of resistance into widening this war in retaliation, in their retaliation actions, therefore for the West to come to save them and fight the war on their behalf, right? The axis of resistance are smart enough to realize that, and their strategy is no, they want to drag this as long as possible in a war of attrition that eventually the Israeli colony will collapse internally and the Western empire will be fatigued from supporting it, that they let go of it. Given that Hezbollah responded very precisely and in a precision attack and didn't kill civilians when it responded to the assassination of General Shukr, Netanyahu was left with the choice to have to then provoke them with something even bigger. Right? Netanyahu wants to control the ladder of escalation. And the resistance in Axis is refusing to allow him to drag them into the next step. They want to choose how and when stages of this war change and develop. And so this is why we haven't yet to see Iran's response to the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh. And this is why also we should be expecting whatever Hezbollah does to make a deterrence of Israel, but not allow an increase in the ladder of escalation to the point of a full-out war. And we should also be expecting that the axis of resistance will want to any larger scale war or conflict to be as close as possible to the American elections, so that the number one issue in this in the election will be the genocide in Gaza and the war that's happening. While Netanyahu wants to get us into war before the election ballots and the vote comes in the U.S., so it wouldn't affect who's going to win those elections, if we actually believe in that there is such thing as democracy. But the long term is that the axis of resistance is winning the favor of humanity. Everybody now looks at the Zionists as problems on all of humanity, not only for Palestinians or the Arabs or the Muslims, that these fanatic, crazy, you know, genocidal state is dragging us all into wars that we've never experienced and are threatening all trade globally, threatening all friendly relationships on this planet between humanity.
And we've seen an attack on Israel from Houthis, from Ansar Allah in Yemen. And they've just used one missile, one single one, and they hit the target. And right now, in your opinion, when they're looking in Israel, when they're looking at this, what has happened and what Hezbollah is capable of doing, and they're not doing this, by the way, because recently they didn't use any sort of hypersonic missiles. They stated that after the attack. But as you mentioned, it seems what they're trying to do is trying to escalate as much as possible to bring the United States in, because the war of attrition is the key in this conflict, that they don't sustain this type of conflict, a war of attrition on their part. The way their economy is functioning right now, you see they're in a huge trouble, and the way that they're having political problems inside Israel within the Netanyahu administration, between these people who are, all of them are in favor of what's the genocide in Gaza, but within them they're having these differences, because they understand, some of them, that if they go against Hezbollah, that would be the end of Israel. Because it's so important right now how what's going on in Israel as well. But when you look at it right now, do you think that is there any condition that Israel could provoke Hezbollah to have a major conflict with them? Because that would be the issue for us.
Yeah, I mean, looking at how Hezbollah has conducted itself since October last year, I think is a very, very rational actor, that they will calculate and recalculate and recalculate. And the priority right now for Hezbollah, probably in the next 2 weeks, will be to go through all their technical systems. They're not going to leave anything that they're not going to open up, check and recheck and recheck, okay? So that there will be no other way for the Zionists to do anything close to this again, specifically in a full-out war situation where an act like this could damage the efforts. So I think the top priority for Hezbollah would be this, to make sure that all their systems are safe from hacking and mass attacks like this. And I don't think they will, we'll wait. I don't want to say anything that, you know, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah will have probably the last word on. Maybe he says, I will bring you right now the heads of 3,000 Israeli colonists, okay, in retaliation. He may do that, but I don't think so. But it could be possible. It's too much of a provocation. And now Hezbollah here in Lebanon has the backing of the vast majority of the population, no matter what their background. So it's a moment that Hezbollah could bank on, to do something bigger. But looking at what Yemen said, the hypersonic and what they did, the hypersonic missile being fired, and it was a Mach 10 speed, the first ever Mach 10 hypersonic missile to be used in a battlefield ever. And that Abdelmalek Al-Houthi, the Secretary General of Ansarullah, in his speech that day, said that this is the warning shot and the opening shot of stage five in this war. So this, you know, kind of with the attack that the Zionists conducted yesterday here, those two things prove to us that now we have moved to actually a new stage in this war. How this the various parties will act, what new surprises that they will use, as we see both Yemen and the Zionists used a weapon that we haven't seen before in this war, and it's shocked and surprised the whole planet, both of those things. And therefore, we should be expecting that any actions from the rest of the combatants in this battle will also be bringing us something new into this stage five. And I think looking at how Ansarullah, number one, defeated the American Navy and the Western Navies without sinking anything, because they didn't want to have that Pearl Harbor situation weighing over the whole world. And given that one missile, hypersonic missile that's called Palestine 2, by the way, brought 2 million Zionist colonists into the bunkers, okay? You know, it's clear that still the Axis of Resistance wants to just give warnings before we go into full scale. They are the rational ones. They're giving a chance to the Israelis, to the West, to come down from the tree. The main cause of all of the solidarity fronts is to end the genocide in Gaza. That's the main tactical goal. The primary strategic goal, yes, is the end of the Zionist colony and the liberation of Palestine. But the first tactical goal of all of the Axis of Resistance is to end the genocide in Gaza. And the response from Netanyahu says that no, we will not accept a de-escalation. We will not accept an end of the genocide. We're actually opening the door for more genocides and more ethnic cleansing and more mass killing in more zones in this region. And the U.S., it seems like, is supporting all of this genocide, mass genocide.
Yeah, recently we've seen that in Israel, they're talking about sending their people to the northern part, to their homes, to the northern part of Israel. But the question is, as much as this conflict is going on between in Gaza and these operations in Gaza, is Hezbollah going to let them to send these people to the northern part, or they're going to attack them?
Yeah, it's impossible that the Israelis will go back. Look, the schools just started already. Both South Lebanon and North Palestine and Gaza have no schools. So, you know, anybody that wants, let's say you're an Israeli colonist and you want to live in the north, well, if there's no schools, how are you going to, where are you going to send your kids? You can't. And also the factories shut down because Hezbollah has been targeting much of the industrial base of the Zionists in the north. So what are you going to do? The only people that will go probably north are soldiers in disguise. Look at the Golan Heights, by the way, the Syria's Golan Heights that are occupied by the Zionists. All the colonies in the Golan Heights are military colonies, according to the law of Israel. Nobody that lives in the colonies in the Golan Heights does not work for the Israeli military establishment. So now the north of Palestine, the only way to resettle it, recolonize it, is to also move the families of the military to these colonies. And that's not going to happen. We're already seeing how the military itself is cannibalizing itself. There's fights between units that are refusing to serve in Gaza, units that are refusing to serve in the north of Palestine. There's families of Israeli soldiers that are demonstrating, Israeli soldiers that are stationed in the north of Palestine, the daily demonstrations asking for their children to be withdrawn and to be sent to the West Bank so they can abuse Palestinian unarmed civilians, you know, instead of, you know, facing real warriors like Hezbollah. And so, no, this is not going to happen. In fact, I think, you know, given that Hezbollah, even before this terrorist attack yesterday, had widened the depth of area that they are attacking, have brought over, in the last 2-3 weeks, they brought, I think, at least 20 new colonies into the firing range. And all the major bases deep inside the north of Palestine, around the Tabaria Lake, the Sea of Galilee, and all the way to the coast around Akka, have been targeted. That means that actually we should be expecting more and more Israelis to leave this area, not to come back to it.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this session, Leith, what do we know right now from what's going on in Gaza and the situation in Rafah, in this part of Gaza?
Yes, earlier today, the Israeli media reported multiple Israeli helicopters airlifting Israeli soldiers wounded and killed. The Israeli media also, according to Israeli military sources, admitted that there is 4 officers that were liquidated in a major attack by the Palestinian resistance inside Gaza. The videos continue to come out from Gaza, proving that the Israeli military is unable to hold any grounds. You know, what they call the Netzarim axis that cuts the heart of the Gaza Strip, that the Israelis pulverize everything in their way between the Gaza envelope and the sea. This Netzarim axis, they keep on widening it. It's now almost a kilometer wide, okay? But they still get beaten in this supposed corridor that the Israelis are supposed to be in control of. The Palestinian resistance keeps on coming from underground somehow and from within the rubble and destroying them and killing the Israeli soldiers. Similarly, around the Rafah area and the Philadelphia axis, the border with Egypt, Sina, the Israelis have practically destroyed half of Rafah city, and they're still unable to stay inside Rafah city. Every day they have to withdraw and go back in, and withdraw and go back in, and get beaten, and their machinery is destroyed. The Israeli military is exhausted. And we got a message out by Abu Ubaida, the spokesperson, for Hamas's military wing, the Qassam Brigades, sent a statement this week to the rest of the Axis of Resistance, and it was distributed in the media here. This is before even the attack on Lebanon, saying that actually the resistance forces are fully healthy, that they have recruited an overwhelming number of new fighters in Gaza that's bigger than even their original fighting corps before the beginning of this genocide, and that they have the vast majority of their weapons caches are still safe. And this is proven because still every day, Palestinian resistance groups fire missiles and rockets on the Gaza envelope and even on Tel Aviv. So and finally, they said in this message that they are ready and capable of continuing this war, continuing this battle for another year at least. These are not the wars of a defeated group, or, you know, this is not a war of a group that is begging for somebody to come and save it. That's not what it is. It was a message assuring all the Axis of Resistance and all the population in the region that the Axis of Resistance doesn't need to go to a full war to save the Palestinians in Gaza, that what they are doing right now is sufficient, because a whole year of genocide in Gaza did not weaken the resistance there, and it will not be able to weaken it for another year even.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Laith.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great pleasure, as always.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.